Today's daf is daf Kufyud Beis, and we're holding about one line up from the middle of the page, which is Amar Rav Papa Labai. Now, it's very important for us to get once again back into this sugya, which is rather complex. Because this daf involves Girsaot problems, and there's two completely different approaches to the whole sugya between the Rashbam and between Tosfos, there's a different Girsaot. I want to discuss Baal Peh first, what the issues are, so that we should be aiming on them ourselves, and then the sugya will be much clearer. Ooh, killing it. I just blasted everything out. Yikes. Sorry there, everybody. Now remember that the beginning of Gemara's discussion about the Seder HaNachlois was based on the actual psukim about the Seder HaNachlois, which originally occurred because Beno Slavchad came to Meshur Rabbeinu insisting on the Chelek of Tzlofchad and Hefer and so on. Okay, the psak there was rather straightforward, from which we based the first Mishnah. Most of everything in the first Mishnah, the fact that it goes first to a bain and then to a bat and then to the brothers, and then we figured out how we know that it's the father. All of those things came directly from the opening Seder HaNachlois. But then we got into the next piece of the Mishnah. The next piece of the Mishnah opened up the door to problems by questioning the nature of the relationship of a Yerusha from a woman. So here the question was, what happens in terms of a child, of a mother? So we got all questions as to whether the son comes first, whether they're even. And we had to look to different riots. We actually had to end up with a Kal V'chomer rather than a straight-out pasuk. And we then got into the more complicated question of how do we know that a Baal is Yerush. So we started the first looking into the first set of psukim. The first set of psukim make a mention of a mysterious man that doesn't really appear there. That man we identified as the Av. He was the node of all of the Yerusha. And then there was a reference to a She'er, and the She'er could have meant maybe the Baal, because generally we refer to a Baal with that kind of logic. The problem was it did not fit into the pasuk very well, because then we were talking about giving the nachala lisheve datatim nachala to lishe'ero akarov elav of the mate, not vice versa. Very funny. So we ended up yesterday, for the first time, looking at the second set of psukim of nachlas. Now the second set is actually the closing parsha in Bamidbar. It's the very, very end of Bamidbar, almost as, I don't know, it seems to come like at the end of these great and important issues of the Bris in Arvot Moab and so on. And all of a sudden, at the end, dealing with the most down-to-earth question of the Nachala, come now the family of Gilad ben Mochir ben Menashe to sue the Bnos Slavcha, basically. Because what's going to happen now, they taina, is that if Benot Slavchad indeed inherit the fields, and it turned out they had a lot of inheritance, if you recall, because they ended up getting the Chelek HaBechor, part of the Chelek HaBechor, part of the Chelek of Hefer, Slavchad himself being Miyotzei Haaretz, they ended up with four separate things, or six, depending how you count it, that were going to be taken, and the Shevet was aghast, because the thought was, look, most people are not going to, if you take, go bus a rove, I mean, a woman can take a husband from anywhere. Likelihood is she'll marry someone from a different shevet. And at that point, if, then something's going to happen to the shevet's property, to the nachala. Now, the if sounds like, but if she marries the right guy from inside the shevet, then nothing will happen to the nachala, right? So the Gemara says, okay, so there's your right. What do we need to discuss it more? If the Torah is concerned, then we have this whole response as a Kodesh Baruch Hu, yes, you're right, they're going to have to marry only a guy that is in Shevet. No. So there you see, obviously, that a husband is Yerush. So yesterday we attacked that and said, how do you see from there that a husband is Yerush? Basically, the same issue would have come up if she has a son. The son now following the inheritance of the father, because it's the Mishpacha Beit Avotam, and that's the whole idea of the din of the Nachal of a Shevet. So let's say the husband has absolutely nothing in his wife's property, but if they have a son, and then he dies, and we don't even need him to die if there's no Nachala to a Baal, but ultimately, even if there is a Nachala to a Baal, in the end, it's going to go to a Ben, and that Ben will be from a different Shevet. So who cares about the Baal? That now undermines our entire riot. Okay, so let us take a look once again and see what the pasuk says so that we can recognize what really is going on over here. We're in now Perek Lamed Vav, the last closing, I shouldn't say Perek, I mean it's a Goyish concept, but the last parsha in Bamidbar. Vayikrivu Roshei Avot lemishpachat b'nei Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe mi mishpachot b'nei Yosef. Vayidabru lifnei Moshe lifnei Anesiim Roshei Avot b'nei Yisrael. Vayomru they said that Adoni tziva Adonai latet et haaretz b'nachala b'goral b'nei Yisrael. Vadoni tziva Adonai latet et nachala tzvofchad achilu lebenotav. Look, we understand you got. I mean, we can't argue about that. I mean, Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, but we got a problem. Vayulachad b'nei Shevi b'nei Yisrael anashim. If they marry to one of the other shvatim, v'nigra'a nachalatan minachalat avotenu, we are going to lose our nachala, v'nosav nachalat amateh, asher tiyena lehem. And now the nachala will go to the other shevet, to whom they will marry, intermarry, and then migoran nachalatenu yigarea will become permanently part of another shevet's nachala. What do you intend to do about that? Because we're not arguing an etzim psak, obviously, which was minashamai, but there's got to be some provision for this kind of situation. And it's worse. It's going to become permanent. Don't try to tell me that, well, it's okay. We always have the Yovel fix everything up because the Yovel doesn't affect the Nachala. On the contrary, the Yovel actually embeds the Nachala. So, Imiyah Yovel of Bnei Yisrael, this is not a Mechira. And therefore, Venosva Nachlatan and Nachlata Matea Shetiyen Alayan, Umi Nachlata Matea Batinigara Nachlatan forever. Right, Sav Moshe b'nei Yisrael al pi Adonai le'mor, Kain matei b'nei Yosef dovrim, the same words that was used for Not Zlofchad. Kain b'not Zlofchad dovrot.
You're right too.
They're both right. Ze adavar sheziva Adonai levnot Zlofchad le'mor, latov b'neihem tiyena lanashim, ach lemishpach matei avihem tiyena lanashim. You can marry whoever you want, as long as it's from the next 10 guys. As long as it's from someone in the Shevet, that's fine. V'loti sov nachalal v'nei Yisrael. Now please note carefully the two psukim that are coming up that seem to be completely repetitious, which we started discussing before. V'loti sov nachalal v'nei Yisrael mimate al matek ish b'nachalat matek avotav yidbeku b'nei Yisrael. And this solves the problem. Now, the next pasuk was the pasuk that triggered our entire thinking about this issue. V'chol bat yoreshet nachala mimatot b'nei Yisrael. Now this introduces a new thing which we touched on yesterday for the first time. How do we know indeed that the nachala from an aim is equivalent to the nachala of an av? Because the pasuk is referring to a woman who inherits two matot, mi matot. How does a woman inherit two matot? The only possible way to inherit two matot is where that woman's parents were from two matot. So she inherited the father and the mother, which makes it clear that there is such an inheritance. Otherwise, such a thing is impossible. Secondly, it also compares, because it didn't say mishne matot. Instead, it says mi matot is one word. So the Gemara said yesterday, that is a hekesh. That tells me whatever din applies to nachalat av, including the kedima of the mother, of the son, rather. So it would apply to the kedima of the son in the Yerushat Ha'em. As a matter of fact, if we wouldn't have another reason to discover that there's no such thing as a Bechor in the sense of Nachla to an Aim, we would have even applied the dinim of Bechor as we saw yesterday with Rabbi Yudin Nisiyah's question. Correct? It's okay. This opens up a whole new can of worms. And now is the reason to think about that can of worms. Because let's consider what actually happened. Remember the case. The case is the parents of this woman that we're talking about now, this Bat, were from two different Shvatim. Did we not just say a pasuk that there cannot be such a marriage? No. We said that a woman who stands in line to inherit cannot marry someone outside of Shevet. We never said that you won't find a case where women marry outside of Shevet. So a woman, in normal conditions, marries outside of Shevet. She's got a large family. Never occurs to her that she is in line for Yerusha. All of a sudden, three of her siblings are killed in a car crash, and now she's the only one that's going to be Yorich. She's not supposed to get divorced. So here she is, a woman who's going to be inheriting from the Shevet of her own family, and she has a daughter. Now that daughter has, as is usually the case, a father. In this case, however, the father's from a different Shevet. And they only have this single daughter. So now, if the parents die, which also usually happens, then this daughter ends up with a Nachla from her mother, who herself was the sole heir from a different Shevet, and a Nachla of her father. Okay. We now have to recognize that the continued discussion in the Pasuk has got to be referring to that woman. Because otherwise, until now you could say God's keeping it simple. We had that first Pasuk, we have a case, here is a girl, she's about to inherit, what do? Let her marry. But now we make things more complicated. Now we've got another generation that is already in a position of having inherited, not that stands in line to inherit. Uh-oh. So what happens now? So if we think about what happens, the first thing that comes to mind is before she does anything, the Nachla is in trouble. Because the Nachla is now owned by a woman who actually is not really part of the Shevet of her father, completely, because she has the shevet of her mother. So you could say, all right, so that nachla sort of still belongs half of where it belonged to, because after all, her mother was born to a man, let's give them names, from shevet Gad, and she is not married right now, and she is a mixture of Gad and Asher, let's say, right? So now here she is. Her nachla has now become split, in a sense. So a nachla from Gad fell to a bat Gad, and now the granddaughter of the guy who died from Gad is half Gad and half Asher. So now Gad nachla is semi-removed from Gad, but she hasn't married yet. So now we have to think, well, whoever she marries now, somebody's going to lose. So if she goes ahead and marries Asher, so then the field that she inherited from Gad is for sure gone. If she goes ahead and marries somebody from Gad, so now, oh, wow, how do you like that? She managed to get the nachla that she had inherited from Gad back to Gad, because she married into God. Oh, but then what happens to her nachla from Asher? Whoops. So now we have a much more complicated case, because here we've got a woman that can't do anything right. However, you say to yourself, okay, I mean, but the fact is that the God part is in bad shape anyway, isn't it? I mean, it already belongs to somebody who's half Asher. More than half Asher, because, I mean, essentially it goes according to Mishpachat Beit Avotah, but she's a woman. So she always has an option of making her life more Gadi or more Ashering through her marriage. All right, but if we're going to save one Nachala, you could say to yourself, the one to save is the Asher one, because the God one, already the moment it fell to her, is sort of standing, it's a liminal state. We don't know what it is, right? All right. So now that we understand that, let us look at the next pasuk and see that it appears to be merely repetitious of the first pasuk. And so we have a woman who comes now, mimatot, chobat. So now we seems to be, again, a simple reading, the way a goy would read this, without having any indication that we've switched subject. So now we're seeking to universalize what it is that we just spoke about. We spoke about benot zlofchad. Now let's make it universal. Chobat yoreshet nachla mimatot b'nei Yisrael shall always be le'achad mimishpachat batei avia tiyeh le'isha, L'man Yerushu b'nei Yisrael ish nachalat avotav, to see to it that the Yerusha will always go velotisov nachalat. Same words we said before, velotisov nachalat b'nei Yisrael. Here we say, just one pasuk before, pasuk Zayin, here we say, velotisov nachalat mimate l'mate acher, ki ish, same word we said before, ki ish b'nachalat mate avotav. Here we say, ki ish b'nachalato. Same word we said before, yidbeku b'nei Yisrael. Here we say, yidbeku matot b'nei Yisrael. Now, each one of those words proves to be critical to understanding what has happened in these two psukim. Yesterday, when we attempted to learn out, we brought the bride of Rabbi Yishmael. So we attempted to learn out from the fact that there are two psukim, that it seems clear if the Torah needs to repeat itself, that one pasuk is talking about Hasavat HaBaal, and one pasuk is talking about Hasavat HaBein. So that there, since there's two ways in which the Nachala can be actually moved, so had I only said one of them, so then the listener can say, well, the most obvious Hasavata Nachala, which we already know from the word Matot, is that a child inherits a mother. If a child inherits a mother, we're in trouble. So therefore, the Torah has to address that problem, because what happens when the mother dies is that now it's going to belong to another shape. But where do I see any hint that a husband is going to be a problem? Ah, but if we take a look at the first pasuk, or we'll see which one is which, we're more medayik, so what do I have two pasukim for then? Must be that one is coming to add that, well, even if there isn't a son, there's going to be a problem. Because in the end, it's not going to go back, if she dies, to the way that a nachla normally goes when someone doesn't have heirs. It's going to, the only time, it's going to go horizontally, and it'll move over to the other shevet, to the baal. And that would be the reason for two pasukim. So yesterday we said, well, but you can't really prove it from the fact that it's two pasukim, because after all, sometimes the Torah gives us two lav about the same issue. So maybe it's two lavim, one that appears to be presented only to benot zlofchad, the other one that is a universal. That's where we were holding. Now, as we pointed out before, there is another clear-cut case in which there's going to be a savata nachala, and that is stay achuza. We've been pointing this out throughout the parak. Stay achuza anyway is a problem. So remarkably, stay achuza is viewed as one of the central rayas to the nature of the relationship of father to son versus father to daughter in the end, it turns out, in which if a son is... We can turn off the heat, no? If a son is the one who is Yoresh, who is the buyback, he goes ahead and he buys, it takes a minute, he buys back the field from the Gizbar, then in Yoval, instead of going out to the Kohanim, it will go back to the father. Great. So from there we see a ben takes the place of the father. Yeah, but what if the ben doesn't buy it back? What if somebody else buys it? So over there, if somebody else buys it at Yoval, it leaves the nachal of the sheva. Now, nobody complains about that. There's obviously nothing to do about it. That's the din of steyachuza. Yesterday, as Richie pointed out, we had a problem with the fact that Shevet Levi seems to have a nachala. So we figured out there's different ways that Shevet Levi could have gotten a nachala. They could have married. And then, assuming that there is such a thing as, and that was one of the psukim that we're bringing as a raya, assuming that there is such a thing as a nachala that can be given to a husband, so then Levi would be like any other husband. Woman dies, he's yorish the field. We found two cases. One of the cases was the burial of Pinchas. And Pinchas now ends up burying, rather his father, burying Elazar ben Aaron in his chelek. And as Richie says, how did he get a chelek? So as the Gemara points out, okay, so this chelek must have come to him through marriage. But now we've got ourselves a lot of other options, don't we? Because it might have come to him through his mother. You know, his mother is not necessarily, we already said, his mother, we had Ben Puti, freed from Yosef, from Yitro. I mean, so there might have been a nachla that had come to his mother, that he was yorish directly from his mother. Or, even better, who's to say that Pinchas didn't get, at the end of a yovel, didn't get a field from a steyachuza? And now Elazar was buried in that field.
He was the Kohen who received it from?
Yeah, it's split among the Kohanim. This particular, absolutely, it's true nachla. So Shevet Levi gets nachla. In this curious way. And it's good. Don't look confused. Be happy. This whole room is full of Kohanim. Just watch out, guys. Don't do anything with that steyachuza. You never know what might happen. Next thing you know, Barnea will be building there. You know what? Soon we will be Masechet Arachin, and we will learn all of those dinim with joy. But now, Bezrat Hashem, let us move on to discuss our sugya. So we ended up yesterday with thinking that there's a good raya because we have two cases, Seguv and Ya'ir. There were Ya'ir obviously had things that Seguv didn't have, and Pinchas who had things that his father Elazar ben Aaron didn't have, and that seems to imply that you get Nakala from somewhere else. Omalei Rav Papa Labaya, I don't understand what the raya is. Why not say Mimai? Well, how do you know that a husband is Yorish? The psukim that we had in the Torah, we already said. Could have been talking about Kroi B'sibat HaBen Kirshanin. We've already explained that you can't prove from the psukim in the story that we just read of the suit of B'nai Mochir. You can't prove anything from there because it doesn't say what the problem is. Kirshanina, we said that yesterday. And here's me, and Yair, maybe he bought fields. All it's cities. All it says is that he had all of these great cities. Who's to say how he got these cities? Maybe he was very rich and he bought these cities. I don't know. Does it say it's a permanent nachala? And maybe Pinchas bought this field in which he buried Elazar. Well, Pinchas nami dezavin mizvan. And maybe all it's coming to do is to show that these were very rich and successful people. Omar Lehi, so Abaya said to him, Pinchas obviously did not buy a field in which he buried his father. That's ridiculous, because then when Yovel comes along, his father's going to end up being buried in somebody else's field. I mean, that's it's absolutely insulting. So, Omalei Pinchas, there's no way that you could explain it that way, because the imkein nimtzit sadeh chozer biyovel, the sod is going to go back to the owner, and then nimtzat sadik kavur bekever sheino shelo, and it's a bizayon. Okay, so, says Rav Papa, why not just say the Nafalei Mistech Haramin? Maybe he owned it. It was a real Nachla, but not because it comes somehow through a wife. It's simply a din that nobody can argue with. A Kohen could very well own a Mistech Haramin. So that's where he buried his father. What's wrong with that? Now, here's where we get into our Girsa problem. According to the Rashbam, who maintains the Girsa as we have it, essentially, we now ignore what he was asking. And Abaya points out that no matter what you do to learn this psukim, you're always going to have a problem. Because Lamaisa, we started off with this mimatot, and the matot meant that a woman has a nachala from two shvatim, her mother and her father, and that made things immensely complicated. And now, says Abaya, I don't even understand if you work it out that we are indeed talking about a case that a baal is yoresh. You are no longer going to be addressing the problem of the Yerusha by your solution. Because assuming that indeed we really are referring to a woman who inherited from Mimatot, what good is it for her to marry into the family of her father if she is then going to be taking the Yerusha from her mother and giving it to her father? You're saying, well, but if she married into the mishpacha of the mother, she'd be taking the Yerusha of the father and giving it into the shevet of the mother. That's true. But there is a solution. The solution is, and this is what Abaya has in mind, the solution is that if we're talking about a case where a Nachala is now in limbo, then why not put it back into exactly the situation that it came from? She can marry a guy who has a father and mother that's exactly like her. So then the Nachala will relate through a mother's side to one Shevet and to a father's side to another Shevet, which is essentially what's happened to it by default. So if we're really concerned anyway for the Nachala to aim, wouldn't we have to deal with that problem? So now, none of this is immediate apparent in what it is that Abaya says. What Abaya seems to be saying is, there's something wrong with our understanding of this entire parsha, because Lamaisa, the Torah, raises a question if it says Bimatot, and that doesn't address the question. Now you can see why this Girsa is very problematic, because there's no response to what Rav Papa just said. It's like, okay, good question. But I got a question about the whole issue. And then we ignore Rav Papa. So we'll see that there's another Girsa, which we'll talk about. At first, let's keep it simple. We'll do it like the Rashi. So it says, Abaya, well, so suffer kamitakra nachla mishifta the email, mishifta the ama, says the Gemara, wait a minute. How do you know that that's a problem? Maybe we don't have to address that problem. Maybe that is something that happened by default. Because the moment that her mother died and the nachla from Shevet Gad fell to this woman, it is now owned by a woman who is half Shevet Asher. So it's already half gone from God, right? So maybe we don't care about that. V'dilma shayne hata shekvar husava. How do you know? Maybe it already was moved. Since it was moved the moment, there's nothing we could do to prevent that. It was moved the moment that the mother died. Because this mother's child is not 100% a gadit. She's a god asherit. So mamela, it's already been moved, right? Omar Leh says Abaye, now again, according to Rashbam, there was no person that Abaye was talking to, and therefore it was the Gemara that was asking on Islam on Abaye. So why would it say Omar Leh? So Enochinami, he doesn't have Omar Leh. So in order to maintain the theoretical discussion of Abaye, it's clear that there can't be an Omar Leh. There's no Leh. So Abaye said, Shekvar Huzba lo Amrina. No. We definitely would not say that it's already half gone, and therefore there's nothing to do about it. Omar Leh Raviyem, my Lord of Ashi. How could Abaye have said that? I mean, isn't it obvious that there must be a concept of kvar huzba, which means by default, an akhla has already been moved? Because otherwise, we might as well give up on this psukim entirely. I mean, what is Abaye saying that we... No, don't give me that one. What do you mean, no, don't give me that one? Did you read the psukim? Did the Torah talk about matot? Did the Torah say that she should marry someone from her father's family? Now, I know how to read. And it says somebody from her father's family. Now, according to Abaye, this whole thing is a joke. Why should she marry some? Obviously, the Torah doesn't care about the Nachla Ta'im. Must be, for some reason, must be because it's gone already. There's nothing to do. I don't know what he's talking about. Does he have an alternative approach to the psukim? I mean, Yamit Bishleim Shekvar Huzba. If we're ready to accept the notion that the Torah is not makbid on a Nachla Ta'im that has fallen to her own daughter, who is only half of the Shevet that she's from, so if you're going to tell me that the Torah doesn't care, Haina de Mituk Mekra, that way the Pusik works out perfectly fine. Because the Pusik is, I don't care what the Pusik is referring to. Asavat HaBein, Asavat HaBaal, makes no difference to me. The bottom line is the Torah doesn't care about the other one. It only cares about the one that's coming from her father because she's a woman who's going to give it to a son from a different Shevet or to a father from a different Shevet. Don't complicate things for me because I don't really care because then you're addressing whatever problem you're addressing. And if there's two problems, you've addressed both problems. Fine. But, I mean, just a simple reading of the Pusik shows you that Abaye is wrong. Because if the Torah does care about a Nachla Ta'im, then how does it not address it? What good is it going to do to marry somebody from Mishpachat Beit Aviyah? She's causing just as much damage. So, what good is that? Anyway, right? She's anyway going to be ripping out the Nachla from God and handing it over to Asher. Well, you didn't think out what Abaye must have meant. Of course there's a solution. The solution is the menasvina la legavra de avui mishifta de avua v'ime mishifta de ima. Very simple. We marry her. I mean, she can marry whoever she likes. It's no problem, you know. As long as his mother comes from God and his father comes from Usher, there's no problem. As a matter of fact, there's a data bank that you can access with Google to find out. Exactly.
I gave the solution, like, Richie gave another solution, which is that she can marry two husbands, one from each mother.
That would be a Richie solution.
Wow. What about love?
That's why it says she should marry only the guy that she really loves. We'll talk about it. All right, so that would be okay, because then she has found a match made in heaven. Says, so now, Taina is now Rabbi Yemar. No, that can't be. Because the Pasuk doesn't say that. I mean, wouldn't the Pasuk have to address that? If the issue is over here, that supposedly we're just as concerned about the Nachala that's coming from her mother that's going to be transferred out of God, so then if you're going to mention who she marries, I mean, certainly this is a much bigger chiddush than saying she should marry somebody from the father's family. So say she should marry somebody from the family of her father and the family of her mother. I mean, you can't leave that out. It's crucial. So Yachi, highly achabni mishpacha beit mate avi avi'ima miboile. What all it needed to do is throw in that word. She must marry somebody from an equivalent family on the father and mother's side. Ah, says the Gemara, you couldn't say that, you see, because it would be very misleading. Why would it be misleading? Let's think what we would have said if we read a pasuk that said that. We would have said, what, does the Torah think we're dumb? Obviously, if we're concerned already for Mate Beit Avia that we saw in the previous pasuk, we're concerned for Mate Beit Ima too. So why then does it say Mate Avia u Mate Ima? It doesn't say, but I'm saying, what if it did say? Here is what the Gemara undoubtedly would have learned. From here you learn that it makes no nafkamina whether the father of her husband is from Dan and the mother is from Asher, whether the father is from Asher and the mother is from Dan. That's what I would have said. Because the Torah is saying either. Doesn't matter, as long as it's from both Mate X and Mate Y, it's fine. Now we've matched our XY chromosomes. It's perfect. It really doesn't matter on which side they come, right? That's what it said. Therefore, comes along the Torah to say, now look, hold on a sec. It's true that we have introduced a new concept called matot. It's true that we don't look at the nachalat ha'em as being hopeless, because it's already anyway musevet. However, it is also true that the essential definition of a nachala is based on the nachala ta'am. It's not that we're going to ignore the fact that there was a hasava, there was a semi-hasava, the moment it fell into the reshus, that is half of another sheva. Since the primary identification of a nachala is in terms of the father, the match-up has to be to someone who's essentially from that father. But if I would go and marry somebody whose father was from God, then, in fact, I'm doing more damage, because then I'm totally destroying the other Nachala, which meanwhile was continuous father, son, and now I'm turning into a daughter who never was even Yorish. Nah, that's crazy. So because of that, the Torah doesn't want to mention the Nachala to Aim and say, Mi Matei Avia V'ima, because that would have introduced a new relationship to Matei Aim, which we don't want to create, and we're left with our understanding of the nature of relationship to the Matot, and nonetheless, we're left to our own devices to figure out that we have to start a lonely art club, and that ain't Achinami, she's going to have to marry this way. That would be the way I understand it. So therefore, with Taina's Abaya initially, that essentially you need to talk about this issue. Okay, this is the way he understands it. Now, that leaves Abaya sort of hanging and Rav Papa sort of hanging, correct? Yes, I said that, didn't I? That no, it's not a filu ipcha. Then we have to look at the essential nachala to concern ourselves with, to remain associated through father to son, so that the shevet usher has got to be able to keep it shevet usher, not say, well, at least it's related. That's not good enough. But for the nachala to aim, which is already, well, at least it's related, so keep it with, well, at least it's related, by making sure that the mother is also from the same, this man has in him the God gene. That's all that we want to know. Now, so again, there's something seriously lacking in this approach. First of all, we don't directly address Rav Papa's problem about how do we know that any of the psukim are talking about anything. And secondly, Abaya asks the question. He's got this interpretation in mind, which he wants us to deal with about the matot, but he doesn't go anywhere with it. He raises an issue. Now, the Gemara deals with what he raises the issue as if we've forgotten all of the words in between the word mimatot, which was the hekesh, and now we're talking about the matot, and there's nothing else to discuss. It's a very, very weird way of constructing the Gemara. Now, as the Rashbam brings, there is another girsa, but he says it makes absolutely no sense, the other girsa. The other girsa is, Omar le Abaya, so that Abaya was responding to the original attack of Rav Papa. Remember, Rav Papa had originally asked Abaya, how do we know that we're talking about a case of asavat Ha'abal, maybe we're talking about Asavat HaBein, and all these additional questions that you bring from Yoyer and from Skuv and from Pinchas and Elazar have another explanation. So there's got to be some way in which we could learn it out of the essential pasuk rather than from looking to these examples of cases where the cases could have occurred in any old way. And more than that, as the Rajwa points out in Taisvas, I mean, what, I understand. They could have been Yorish themselves from their mother. Or directly from their grandfather. I mean, I don't get it. What's the issue? If all that we're talking about are these cases, there's lots of possibilities. We didn't have to create this Hasavat Habal to get there. So therefore, Tosfos says that on the contrary, it does say, Omar Le Abaya, meaning Abaya is responding to Rav Papa. You, Rav Papa, are worried about maybe Enoch and Ami. We don't have any raya from the pasuk. These psukim have to do with either the Yerusha directly from a mother, or maybe they have to do with Steacherim. I don't know. But who's to say that there's such a thing as the Asavat HaBaal? Maybe, really, there's only Asavat HaBein. And that's what we're left with. That there's Asavat HaBein. Tells Abaya to him, if you're going to tell me that a Baal is not Yoresh, now, the only words we have to take out, according to us, is this business about Bein Asavas HaBein, or Bein Asavas HaBaal, because that no longer works. And all we say is that if you're going to say that a Baal is Yorish, and the Pasuk is referring to Asavas HaBaal, then we have a solution. Because then the Pasuk that's coming to tell you, do something about this horrific situation, could be saying, do something about the situation in which a Nachalat Ha'em is going to be wrecked no matter what you do. That's going to be a problem. You're not even thinking about that problem, are you? To which Rav Papa says, of course I'm not thinking about that problem. I mean, there's nothing to do about that problem. Oh, you're wrong, says Abaya. There's very much something to do about that problem. Because if the issue is how she has to act, then what she can do is directly marry a man who's going to be in a position of taking that field and it being exactly what she was, which is where it was in the first place, when it was Musav. So therefore, if we're talking about Asavas HaBaal, then it works, because it's certainly the mashma'ut of the pasuk. If it introduces between the first lav and the second lav, gentlemen, this is a subtle point, please, please pay attention. We introduce this new complexity of mimatot. If the pasuk didn't mean to deal with that complexity, why did it introduce it? This is a bias point. And all of you have ignored that. And the very fact that it's introduced is the raya that we are talking about, a Hasavat HaBaal. Because if it introduced the point, it obviously wants us to figure out what we're supposed to do in the context of the following pasuk. So if we're talking about Hasavat HaBaal, then there's something to do. Get a man who will come from that shevet, because now there will not be a Hasavat HaBaal at all above and beyond what had already happened to this poor chelek that had fallen into this woman who's half God and half Asher. And there, it would be exactly the same. Now, it's true. Of course, I know you're thinking, but I mean, anyway, the husband's going to die. And when the husband dies, a son who is clearly entirely after his father is going to be Yoreshit. And now it's going to be completely in the hands of this father, because now it's already three generations away from the genes of God, right? So if that's the case, what are we going to do? You know, maybe even the Baal will never inherit her. Maybe the Baal will die first. Maybe it'll go directly. Fine. You're right. We can't do anything about death. But what we can do is not with our hands ruin this Nachala. That's all. So Bishlema, says Abaya, therefore it's a direct response to Repub, and it's brilliant. Bishlema, if there is, in fact, Asavat HaBaal, then it is in her hands to address the issue. And obviously the Torah wouldn't have introduced something that it doesn't mean to talk about. So if we have a woman now who has a Nachala both from God and Asher, and then I say, oh, and by the way, you just said that a second ago. What do you mean, oh, and by the way? Oh, and by the way, let every woman marry into the Nachala of the... Did you just say that? So what are you going to try to tell me? Well, it's just a repetition. There's two lavin. Come off it. We just introduced a whole new sugya. So therefore, the new lav has got to be referring to, take into consideration when you marry that husband, take into consideration that he should not be a further Hasavat HaNakala from the aim. And if you, that's why obviously we can't say, oh, Iba Hasavat HaBaal or Hasavat HaBein. The whole point is that Abaya is making is that it's only Hasavat HaBaal, you see? So then Abaya is absolutely brilliant. So now what Rav Yemar says to Rav Ashi misses his point. Abaya says this one word, and it is so laden with impact that they just missed what he was trying to say. What? Anyway, we're going to... I don't understand. I mean, we don't care about that, do we? I mean, it's already gone. It's already inherited. Missing the point that Abaya is saying that, no, that's the whole issue, is that it isn't already gone. Because if it were, why mention it? You see how beautiful it is? Therefore comes on the Gemara to say, according to Tosfos, no, that's not what Abaya is saying. If there's only Hasavat HaBein, which you, Rav Papa, think, then there's really nothing to do. Because how are you going to change the yichus of the son, which is going to follow the father? There's nothing for you to do. You are who you are, and you're either going to marry a man from God, or you're going to marry a man from Asha. And the Torah is telling you, you got to marry a man from Asha. There's nothing to discuss. What more can you do? Richie's solution being inappropriate.
I think they should be set up, I'm told, to take properly, like...
The Gemara already asked that question. Right. We're going to give it to the government?
Right. No.
The government takes all of it. The government takes all of it.
From another one, and they trade off. You figure it's got to be somewhere even.
But trading is mechira. That's the problem. That's why they go through this whole business about Yovel. Any trade that you would do would be violated by Yovel. That's why they say, I know what you're thinking. You're going to come up with Richie's idea. What good is Richie's idea? The Pusik talks about your idea. Take a look. The Pusik talks about your idea. Look in Pusik Dalet, Lamed Vav Dalet. We have in the suit of B'nai Gilad Ben Mocher comes exactly the Richie issue, right? That's what's there. Between Pusik Gimel and Pusik Dalet is Richie. Why not just make a pool? Ah, they answer, because then, in Yovel, the pool is canceled. Because there's no way to make a pool that Yovel doesn't cancel, because pools are exchanges, and then it would be Lekuchotein, like by any Arusha.
We do a prosbol.
No, they didn't come up with that idea. No, prosbols are not, prosbols are for money. Prosbols have nothing to do with that. It had nothing to do with transferring back to Sodom. That ain't going to help. But you said, no, you tried brilliantly. You were Meir Enei Kulam and how to read a pasuk. Wonderful, wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Okay, so this is the way Tosfos understands it now, which means there is an Omar Leh because they're fighting. You know, if they got Omar Leh on the contrary, it's got to be an Omar Leh. Abaya directly answered Rav Papa, and now we were attacking his understanding of Rav Papa, and we got not an explanation, the second pasuk, which was the whole thing that Abaya was looking for in the first place. Ah, wonderful, simply wonderful. So Abaya turns out to actually be a brilliant insight that is completely appropriate to where we are at. It's a reference back to Matot, but it's a direct response to Rav Papa. Now that we've seen that we're taking for granted at this moment that the second pasuk is certainly not repetitious, and it's referring to a different issue, and it follows the Mimatot. The truth is, we are now going to throw out yesterday's, we used it as a defiya, didn't necessarily say we buy into it, but the fact is, we were left with this whole business of we need Pinchas, and we need Skuv, and Yoyer, and we don't need any of that. Because now it's clear that the Etzim Psukim in the Torah have got to be referring to Asavat HaBaal. There's no question. Comes along the Gemara at this point to say, yep, there are two brises from different points of view. Points out that these two Psukim are referring to two cases, one by Asavat HaBein and one by Asavat HaBaal. Not like we said yesterday, we just throw them together into a mishmash. And the truth is that the Diyukim in the Pasuk are mind-boggling. They're so beautiful. Remember that one of the issues that we had with Steyachuza. One of the issues of Steyachuza was, if the Gizbar sells to an Ish Acher, now we said, well, Acher's got to mean somebody but not a son, right? Because you wouldn't call a son an Acher. We had a whole question of, would we call the daughter an Acher? That was a question. But the word Acher can't mean a son. Really? Uh-huh. Look into these psukim, and all of a sudden you discover that is a very important word in this story. The first pasuk says, "Veloti sov nachalal of Bnei Yisrael mimate el mate." The second pasuk says, "Veloti sov nachalal mimate el mate acher." Now that's beautiful. Okay, so one of them introduces a strangeness which the other one doesn't have. So which one would be referring to a son? Could a son be a mate acher, or would it be the father? A Baal. A Baal's always strange. So he could certainly be an acher. Certainly a son can't be an acher. That's one issue in the pasuk. The other issue of the pasuk is that other interesting word that makes it clear that we're talking about husband-wife. The word, the davak b'ishto, sound like a familiar word? Yidbeku b'nei Yisrael appears in both psukim. But one of them says yidbeku matot. The only way yidbeku matot is through marriage. Okay, so one of these psukim is talking about marriage. Specifically, and the relationship that was indeed being addressed by marriage, not by the fact that they're children that come of marriage, but by marriage per se. So these diyukim, together with the insight of Abaye about the complexity of the case of Mimatot, change our entire interpretation of the whole sugya. We now have a much deeper appreciation of the details of what's really going on here beyond the original Parshas on Nachala. It's so enriching. It's just absolutely marvelous.
And it's the same pasuk, the Acher.
It sounds like it. Yeah, these two pasuk, exactly. So now, let us take a look as the Gemara brings a raya for both of these approaches. Sorry, but it is a complicated doubt. Tanya, now we have a braita that refers to Sibat HaBein, Tanya b'Sibat HaBaal. This is very misleading because it sounds like there's an argument to the braita about whether it's so the Tanya b'Sibat HaBein is wrong. And it's actually the Tanya b'Sibat HaBaal v'lo Yisof. It's the two braitas that say the same thing for different reasons. And here's where it is. The Tanya we have goes, V'lo tisov nachala livnei Yisrael, mimate el mate. So here we have mimate el mate, the opening pasuk. Well, that's got to be talking about b'sibat habein, hakatuv medaber. Well, what makes you say that? Atomer b'sibat habein? O enarala b'sibat habal? No. Because, look, it says, V'lo tisov nachala mimate lemate acher. Doesn't it say that in the second pasuk? Mate acher. That mate acher, that's talking about Sibat HaBaal. How we know that the Gemara is going to question. But that's talking about Sibat HaBaal, you see. And now that's a given. In which case, all that's left in the first pasuk is that the Parmani Mikayem Velo Tisov Nachalal of Neyesomi Mate in the first pasuk, B'Sibat HaBein HaKatuv Medaber, which is exactly what Abaye has been saying. That the second pasuk is a response to Mimatot B'nei Yisrael, and therefore it's got to be addressing something that you can do about it. What are you going to do about it? You can't do anything about Ha'asavat HaBein. You can only do something about Ha'asavat HaBaal. The Bein is what happens, but the Baal is what you do. And that is still in your hands. The way the other Braita puts it, Tanya Ida, V'lo tisov nachala mimate l'mate acher, that's referring to the Sibat HaBaal HaKatuv Medaber. It is. Atomer b'Sibat, it starts from the other end. You say it's talking about b'Sibat HaBaal. Maybe it's talking about Sibat HaBein. No, it says, Lo tisov nachala l'bnei Yisrael mimate amate. So that mate amate, that's referring to the Asavat HaBein. So amani mekayem v'lo tisov nachala mimate l'mate acher, b'sibat HaBaal HaKatuv Medaber. So therefore points out the Gemara, we must be missing something. The Kulei Alma, everybody seems to agree that the second posik that says mimate l'mate acher is referring to a Sibat HaBaal HaKatuv Medaber. So what makes us say that? My mashma. Now, this simon seems to be an error, and indeed is taken out in many of the Gersaot, although some people try to say it's the name of a person, that there's a Mr. Simon. But anyway, Omar Rabba Bar of Shila, Omar Kra, Ish. The reason is because the Torah says Ish, and therefore we want to understand that the idea of a Ish is a reference specifically to your man. A Baal is an Ish. Ish Naomi is the parasha of Nachala. And there we talk about Ish. So Mamela must be that the Pasuk is referring to Sibat HaBaal in that second Pasuk. So we want to talk about Ki Ish Benachalato Yidbeku. Omar, says the Gemara, Tarvayu Ish Ktivu. Why are you so persuaded that ish of one pasuk is more meaningful than the ish of both the other pasuk? Ish one says ki ish benachalat matei avotav yidbeku, and the other one says ki ish benachalato yidbeku. Are you so convinced that the personal element of nachalato and ish is sufficient to say that it's there that we're talking about an ish, but not in the other one, in which an ish just means a man? Maybe he is. I mean, the Gemara doesn't explain why it was that Rabba Bar of Shila thought that Ish was persuasive. Perhaps, some suggest, that Rabba Bar of Shila just wanted to say there's no way to avoid the fact that it was certainly discussing a Baal in one of these psukim. Now you're going to have to identify the ben. Okay. Ela, but we can zero in much better. Ela, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. It says Yidbeku. Now that one is definitely marriage oriented. Omar kai Yidbeku. Wait a minute. But Tarvayu Yidbeku Ktibu. No. You're missing his point, says Rava. Ela, Omar kra Yidbeku Matot. It says Yidbeku Matot. How do Matot get stuck to each other? Through Vedavak Beishto. And that's a direct reference back to Mimatot. There's only one way to have Mimatot, and that's through marriage. So that's got to be referring to a husband. So therefore, we now know that we've got a pasuk referring to marriage. Rav Ashi says, I got the simplest solution. The Torah talks about mate le mate acher. What does that mean, mate acher? You can't say that a ben is an acher. A ben is lav acher hu. And we would never call the ben an acher to his wife, to his mother, would we? It's not an acher. I mean, this is the baser echad. So what you've got to be saying is that the reference to an acher is the asavat habal. That is somebody else. That's completely from Mars. You know, here we are happily in Venus. This Meshuggah comes along. Roshenke, if you're talking about a ben, the ben, she sees an extension of herself.
So they both use the same box. The question is what the point is on the matot or the
exactly.
Baku. And
yes, right. So now we have three reasons, possibly four if we take into consideration. Rabba Bar of Shila's ish, because of the personal ish. The ish Naami is benachalato. We have three or four reasons to understand the Parsha as being built around two completely different things. Nobody suggests for a moment, neither of these Tana, these brises suggest for a moment that this would be the same lav repeated, because we never repeat a lav where there's another lima to be gleaned from it. Since I hold that I could see what it is that needs to be gleaned, I'm never going to say, see, originally we didn't make any of these diyukim. So we said, well, it's another pasuk, word for word, same as the first pasuk. Okay, so maybe it's another lav. Because I'm not going to say, well, let's make up something. Maybe let's make up something. Let's not make up something. That's the old Occam razor issue again. Don't make up something. So we don't necessarily have to say that what we're doing is rejecting the whole idea of the Torah giving two lavim. Yes, Torah gives two lavim. But what we might be saying is, if there's any indication I know where to look for the meaning of the difference, then obviously that's what it's meant to be teaching me. So here we have many reasons to know that difference. One follows me matot, and one precedes matot. Following matot, it's got to be saying, what can I do about this problem? And that could only have to do with who I marry, not who my son is. Furthermore, it's talking about an acher can only be a husband. Furthermore, it's talking about yidbeku. How can matot be yidbeku? Only through a husband. And furthermore, it says ish nachalato. And ish nachalato has got to be referring to the ish himself, the husband that I'm going to be worried about. Omalei Rav Papa Labai. Mima? Dilma li olam emelecha ba'al lo yarit v'kroi v'sivat ha-bin kidishanina. And Yoyer deserving mizman and pichas. And I'm deserving mizman. I'm like a complete pichas deserving mizman lo matzit amrit. In Kenyim takes Sadeh Choser Biovel, and that turns out to have a tzaddik kavur bekever shein oshalo. That's crazy. Okay, still Eimad Nafal Mistei Harami. Omar Abaye, sof Hakom is Akron Achala Mishifta the Ima Lashifta the Aba. Umimai Diomer Shani Atam Shikvaru Sava anyway. Omale, please Shikvaru Sava Lo Amrina. Omale Reviyim Lervashi. How is could he say that? Yamit Bishleim Shikvaru Sava. Then at least the pasuk makes sense. Hainem it took mikra, ben misivat habein, ben misivat habal, ele yamed lo amrin and shikvar usava. So then what good is it? Ki min tzivat achad bimishpachat mate aviyah, my avi. Anyway, yamit akra nachala mishifta de yimad lishifta de abba. Ah, because there's always an option, you see. The mitzavina lo lagavra di avui mishifta de avua, vi ime mishifta de ime. Si ihachi, it should say that. Hai leachad bimishpachat mate aviyah vi ima mi boile. No, because that's misleading. Iktiv hachi hava minafilu ipcha. Kamash balan, it's got to be matched father to father, mother to mother. Tanya b'sivat haben, which goes like this. V'lo tisov nachala levnei Yisrael, u'b'sivat habal. V'lo tisov nachala levnei Yisrael, mimate amate. Now that's b'sivat haben, hakatuv medaber. Tomer b'sivat haben, or elo b'sivat habal? No. Because kishu omer v'lo tisov nachala mimate lamate acher, hare v'sivat habal, the second pasuk, is clearly talking about sivat habal omur. So therefore, kishu omer v'lo tisov nachala mimate lamate acher, that's hare v'sivat habal omur. Amani mikayim v'lo tisov nachala v'nei Yisrael, mimate lamate, that's got to be b'sivat haben hakatuv medaber. The other brisa puts it slightly differently. V'lo tisov nachala mimate lamate acher, the second pasuk, has, it's a given. That's referring to Sibat HaBaal, HaKatuv Medaber. Huh? Maybe it's Sibat HaBaal. Maybe it's referring to Sibat HaBein. Kishu Omer, Velo Tisov Nagalad Bnei Yisrael Mimateh El Mateh. That's the one that's referring to Sibat HaBein Amur. Hamani Mikayem Velo Tisov Nagalad Mimateh El Mateh Acher B'Sibat HaBaal, HaKatuv Medaber. So, the Kulei Alma Miet Mimateh El Mateh Acher is definitely B'Sibat HaBaal. Why? My mashma. Omar Rabba Bar of Shila, Omar Kro Ish. Huh? Tarvayu Ish Ktibu. El Omar of Nachma by Yitzra, Omar Kro Yidbeku. What? Tarvayu Yidbeku Ktibu. El Omar Rav, Omar Kro Yidbeku Matot is the point. Ravashi Omar, Omar Kro Mimatel Mate Acher. Now, how could that be referring to a Ben? Ben Lav Acherhu?